This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The NCAA and UNC Chapel Hill seem to be at odds over the ongoing investigation into academic fraud at the university. The News and Observer published documents showing the Sports Association no longer considers the university a partner in that investigation. Joining me in the studio now, Dan Kane, an investigative reporter at the NNO, credited with breaking the story of fake classes at UNC. He's been following the story now for more than 5 years. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me on the show.
Also joining me is UNC Chapel Hill history professor Jay Smith. He co-wrote a book called Cheated, Exploring the Fraudulent Classes at UNC, and he's currently teaching a sports history class that delves into the connections between academics and college sports. Jay, welcome. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
We did make repeated requests to UNC Chapel Hill Chancellor Carol Folt to join us on this program. We've done that over many months. She has declined. The university also declined to offer another representative on this topic, so we will talk with Dan and Jay. Dan, fake classes at UNC came to light in 2011. NCAA and UNC had a hearing a few weeks ago. What do we know about how this investigation is going?
Well, where we are now is UNC has argued that the fake classes aren't within the purview of the NCAA. It's something that should be just be handled by the accrediting agency, and they have handled it. You know, UNC was on probation for a year, because of this whole scandal. But the NCAA, disagrees. At least the enforcement staff disagrees. And so, what we had about a month ago was a closed hearing. You know, at the NCAA near the NCAA headquarters in Indianapolis, where they argued these procedural arguments about, sort of due process arguments that you don't have any jurisdiction, that statute of limitations had run out, that evidence you want to use, you really can't use, things of that nature. And since it was a closed hearing, we don't know what the outcome was. We don't know what was said at that hearing. Was there an oral decision followed and with perhaps maybe something in writing would come out afterwards? We just don't know. And so the case will probably go to a hearing with the potential of infractions, because there's another piece of the case involving Jan Boxall, the former faculty leader, who was also an academic counselor within an academic support program for student athletes. And the NCAA's enforcement staff had found that she had done more work on student papers, women's basketball team players, than she should have. So you have this other piece that is likely to continue, because the UNC is not disputing that there was a problem with that. But the fake classes, that's where we don't know. Are they going to stay when we get to an infractions hearing?
All right. So tell us, just give us a brief summary of what those fake classes were and why that's a problem.
Oh, well, what we had here was a department manager who was basically a clerical employee. Her name was Deborah Crowder. And as far back as the early 90s, she started creating classes that didn't meet, that only required a paper, and she was the de facto professor, even though she was not faculty. She didn't even have a master's degree, and she would grade the papers. And she, if you turned in a paper, you got a high grade. That was pretty much the deal. And there's evidence in there that indicates this started initially because of complaints from the academic support program, can you kind of ease up on our guys here? And so she comes up with these things, and then it just kind of takes off.
All right, so you've got that. And the question is, so this is academic fraud. There have been a number of resignations over this this whole scandal at the university. And now, ultimately, the question is, did they break any NCAA rules in doing this? And this is why this hearing is important. And the university is saying, no, this is not an NCAA thing. This is our problem. We're fixing it. NCAA says, not so fast. You're trying to get some information about some of the details and documents that would give you an insight into how that hearing went, right? And can't do it.
Yes, that's right. For example, back in August of 2011, when this thing, finally got exposed, there were interviews that were conducted by UNC and the NCAA of some of the key characters, including, Julius Nyangoro, the chairman of the department, who also had created some of these fake classes. And, here we are, 5 years later, more than 5 years later, and we still don't know, what he said in that interview, what was asked, and I think in some ways, even more importantly, what wasn't asked, And there were several others during that period. There were student athletes who were interviewed. There were academic support staff for athletes who were interviewed. There was a Swahili professor who was interviewed who a year earlier had told a university attorney, you know, about a, you know, this who was looking into one of these, you know, who's looking into one of these classes, said, "I didn't teach it."
Right. You know? So they knew something was going on. And again, the question: why is the NCAA? Why is it taking them so long? I mean, if this is a violation, wouldn't they be quick to say, "Okay, we're going to suspend you for, or put you on probation, something, take away your championships, whatever they could do."
Yeah, that's an excellent question. You know, if you read the enforcement staff's recently filed response in advance of this hearing, you know what they are now saying is, you know what, you know, 5 years ago when you guys first brought this to our attention, you didn't really give us the full story. Now, whether it was intentional or unintentional, they didn't feel like they got the full story. And they also said they also felt that UNC, didn't kind of uphold its end of the bargain in terms of what a joint investigation should be. And so therefore they argue, look, this is still in play here, you know, because of that, you know, because of just the seriousness of these of what happened here, 18 years. You know, they note that there were a number of, you know, there were some academic officials who had some awareness of this, and yet it didn't stop. So
all these questions going on for so long, you're mm-hmm. still trying to get information, and we, the public, still don't know what's going on. So it's just mm-hmm. between the two of them, but you've got requests in and FOIA requests get this data, and
exactly.
The wheels turn slowly. So, Jay, let me talk to you for just a minute. Jay Smith, you're a specialist in early modern France. What brought you into your interest, piqued your interest in this, right. and got you to teach a class in this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, I was drawn into this story just as a conscientious citizen of the university. My conscience wouldn't allow me to remain silent as I watched university leaders violate the principles and values of the university by failing to be forthright and transparent and honest about everything that had happened. So as I read the NNO in the summer of 2011 and into 2012, I got more and more frustrated by what our leaders were failing to give Dan Cain. And you know, before I knew it, by the spring of 2012, I was just heavily invested in this story, and I couldn't let it go.
You co-wrote a book, as we said. You were outspoken. What was it like to be on campus at that time with this particular message of yours?
At times uncomfortable. Sometimes, though, it was exhilarating. I mean, I felt I was doing important work. I made a lot of new friends. I've networked in new ways with people around the campus. I probably have more friends than enemies, I think, on the campus at UNC. But yeah, there have been times when it was uncomfortable. I don't think they like me in South Building too much.
So, you're currently teaching a sports history class at UNC Chapel Hill. Tell us about that class.
This is a course I developed last fall, about a year ago, because I was frustrated that that the university had basically let pass the opportunity to seize our scandal and think critically about college sports, about the system as a whole. And so I channeled some of that frustration into developing this course so that at least some of our undergraduates on the UNC campus would have the chance to think about the lessons that should be derived from the UNC scandal and how the UNC scandal connects to broader long-term developments in intercollegiate athletics. So, you know, we take the story from the late 19th century when intercollegiate athletics was born in the form that we know now and follow the trajectory of intercollegiate athletics up to the 1990s, and we end the course with a consideration of the UNC case.
And obviously UNC Chapel Hill is not at all alone in being embroiled in these kinds of things. There is so much money involved in college sports. It's going to happen every day. So how much, to what extent are you focusing on UNC Chapel Hill? It's obviously, mm-hmm. it's a case study, so that's
right.
That's important. Do you take a look at the broader picture?
Yeah, indeed we do, yes. I would say something like 15 or 20% of the course is dedicated to UNC, to the UNC scandal. We read the book, we read Cheated. But the rest of the course is dedicated to other developments and other places and other reform movements. And I mean, I think one of the great things about the course, I hope the students see it this way too, is that they get to see that UNC, what happened here, is the culmination of a very long process. And then it's absolutely part of a systemic set of problems that are national in scope. And they go back at least a century.
Do you get students who take the course simply to challenge you? Because obviously there are a lot of boosters on campus and off and who don't want to hear this message.
I do get challenged on occasion. I would say, though, that most students have found the course illuminating and When they challenge me, they're asking very good questions that show that they've been reading and that they've been thinking and that they've been connecting dots in ways that maybe I hadn't anticipated.
What have you learned in putting together this course that surprised you?
Oh, I've learned so much. They say that if you want to learn about something, teach it, right? Mm. This course is a living testament to that because I've learned so much about the the many failed reform efforts that sort of mark the history of college athletics going back to the early 20th century, but particularly the 1930s. The 1930s are a fascinating decade. I mean, Frank Porter Graham, the legendary Frank Porter Graham, tried to change the relationship between UNC Chapel Hill and its athletics program. It was a valiant effort, failed dismally. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, you can trace the history of UNC athletics back to that moment in the 30s when Frank Porter Graham and those who supported him couldn't quite get things right.
And there was somebody who, again, had great deal of prestige, many, many successes. So what you're saying is if he fails, it's like, all right, let's give up this mission.
No kidding. Yes, no kidding.
Dan, I know this is a little outside of the scope of your reporting, but clearly it's well within the larger framework, the question of money and college athletics. I mean, is this something that you look at? And is this a fixable problem? It seems like there's so much money in this that how would you ever extract the college athletics and go to a sort of an amateur program like they have in Europe or Canada?
Yeah, it's a very vexing question. There have been a lot of proposals, and just about all of them involve major change. As I've looked over sort of the landscape of these things, I mean, you know, one that seems like it could possibly be done with, I mean, it would still be a lot of fuss, but I mean, turning basketball into kind of a minor league system for mm-hmm. basketball, they have a development league, the NBA has. It's possible. I mean, how hard would it be to add more teams, up the pay for kids who are signed, much like minor league baseball,
right.
And kind of at least it seems like there's some potential there in a relatively, I don't say easy way, but somewhat safer way to make that happen. Football is like a whole other ball of wax because, you've got to have huge infrastructure for football. Right. So trying to set up like a minor league, program for football would take huge investment. Unless you somehow had some kind of deal worked out with all these universities to say, okay, these will be paid players in your facilities. You can even call them the Tar Heels,
right.
But they're paid and you can sort of work out the academics is part of that, but
well, that's part of this is this fiction of the student athlete as though they're pure because there's no money going to them. There's an awful lot of money going to the university and media outlets. And Jay, I think one of the things you look at in your course is just how athletes are treated in this particular system that we have.
Right, exactly. I mean, in my opinion, the one thing that needs to be done to fix the system, the one thing that needs to be done is to empower the athletes themselves, to give them a voice. They don't have a seat at the table. They have no say in setting the terms in which they perform their athletic feats. And as a result of that, they're sort of at the mercy of their coaches who run this professional commercial enterprise and who are pressured to win at all costs and who demand 50 hours of work each week from them. And therefore, they're vulnerable to all forms of abuse, physical abuse, psychological abuse, and academic abuse, as we have seen. And what needs to be done is to get them to the table, empower them, let them have a voice. And let them have a part in deciding whether basketball and football should be professionalized or whether instead they should bargain for greater academic freedoms, more learning opportunities, better health protections, medical insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Get them to the table.
And then you would have a system that wouldn't provide so much incentive to cover up and to lack transparency in public institutions. Dan, we were talking earlier about public records requests denied by UNC. You've made a lot of requests over the past few years. Recently asked for the transcripts and the conversations between Julius Nangaro and NCAA. We talked about that a little. And UNC representatives. Nangaro, of course, the former chairman of the Department of African and Afro-American Studies, who was part of this. Tell us about the request, what you're asking for now, and why you think it's important these transcripts come to light.
Well, it gets back to, I mean, in some ways, we have two scandals here. One is the fake classes themselves that were, you know, created so many years ago and, you know, stayed in place for so long. And then we have this other, you know, scandal of a university, once it, this comes out, just not, you know, kind of resisting efforts to get to the bottom of it. And we're still there. You know, it's hard to accept the university's argument to the NCAA that, hey, you know, you guys took a look at this and you walked away without knowing what it was they looked at. You know,
and that's one of the things. What were you saying to the NCAA exactly. back then? How much did they really know, and how much of this has been revealed to them since? We don't know that.
Exactly.
Well, Dan, I want to thank you very much. Dan Kane's an investigative reporter with the News and Observer. UNC Chapel Hill history professor Jay Smith also joined us, co-author of Cheated, the UNC Scandal, the Education of Athletes, and the Future of Big-Time College Sports. Dan and Jay, thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
We made repeated requests to UNC Chapel Hill for Chancellor Carol Fold over the past many months to join us on this program. She has declined. University also declined to offer another representative on this topic. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. You can be part of the show. We're getting toward the end of the year. We want to find out what your favorite program is, a driveway moment for us. We're going to put together a program with your favorites, so you need to tell us what that is. State of Things driveway moment. Email us, sot@wnc.org, and then we'll talk to you, and we'll put a clip together, and it'll be nice, and you can be on the show, and we'd be happy to hear from you. So send us an email, sot@wnc.org, put you on the show, and ask you for your favorite moment in the past year. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Katie Barron, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.